to Hammer Don.
Dad.
Number one sports gambling podcast coming out of the Pat McAfee Show offices.
Yeah.
I am Tone Diggs. Hello.
Tony.
How are you? Sitting in this seat will be Pat McAfee soon, I am sure. We just got done with his show on this same YouTube channel every day, noon to three. Sitting next to him, the Nuke Man himself, the Canadian sensation, Bubba Gumpino.
I like that name, Tony.
The
I
Canadian
like
sensation.
Yeah, let's stick with that.
Pretty good, right?
I like that one.
He wears the Hawkeye colors there. I like
that. Whoa, Hawkeye's in? All right. And former NFL GM, host of the Lombardi Line, the GM Shuffle Pod. Make sure you subscribe to the Daily Coach. Writes for The Athletic. And NFL insider, Michael Lombardi.
Hey, Mike.
I still have a few friends, you know. I mean, you know how it is. I love this one. You know, the deal wasn't done. Okay, so we know this. It wasn't done, even after I reported it. But then 2 hours later, Urban Meyer's getting off an airplane.
Yep.
If no one gets on a plane unless the deal's done. No one. Trust me on that now.
Michael, my favorite thing about it was you reported it. And then, like, all the insiders, you could tell they were a little upset. So they were like, well, yeah, I mean, there's a deal close, but it's not done yet, okay?
No. Yeah, there's no way I could get – just like Antonio Brown's not signing with the Bucks, okay? Let's get that straight.
How
often? When he's playing on Sunday, just so you know, he's really not playing.
No, I mean, that's what the worldwide leader would have you believe, Mike.
That's what they told me last summer. They said, no, they told me that when I said it. I don't know when it was, the summer. It was a lie. Oh, it's a lie. He's lying. Yeah, right. Okay.
How often?
I don't say, there's so much shit I know that I don't say because I can't. You know, that people ask me questions, ask for advice. I give it. I say it. I'm not going to rat them out and say, hey, I got a phone call from this team. They're thinking about doing this. Then they won't call you again. But I'm not going to sit there. When I give something, it's usually because I got it from somebody really, really good.
I was going to ask you that because Pat has to do that sometimes with people he knows and stuff like that, and he'll find stuff out. But he's like, I mean, I'm not in that game. Like, we'll just sit on it, and when it gets broken, it gets broken. I assume you have to do that a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to jeopardize my kids' future. You know, it's bad enough that I'm not exactly politically correct all the time. To jeopardize their future, and I don't want to report something in confidence. As a friend that asked me a question, you know, that I don't want to say, you know, this is what's going on, or if I give somebody advice on what job they should take or what they shouldn't, I don't want to report that they're taking this job. Like, I don't get my that's not what I analyze football for a living. I write about, you know, football. I write about leadership and those things. So that's really what motivates me. Not, you know, at 12:38, I broke this story.
Correct.
You know? Yeah, well, you're damn good at what you do, Mr. Lombardi.
Thank you, Gump. I appreciate that. I do.
So what do you think of the hiring?
Huh?
So what do you think of the hiring?
Can I ask one more follow-up?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, I just heard the question while I was walking in there about sitting on news and for the future or anything like that. I assume with your relationship with Belichick, too, there's probably been some rather large news that you've just kind of held on to for a while.
No doubt. I mean, I'd never say anything about the Patriots or break a story about them or talk about it, because to me that breaks the confidence of a friend. You know, I would never do that. And I see myself as still part of that because my son's there. Or even Matt Rhule, if he calls me and says, what do you think about this? I'm not going to say, oh, this is what I think you know. I don't even tell people who I talk to, so that, you know, they don't even know who my friends are in the league. So it doesn't really matter.
Agreed. Well, I'm not that Diggs kind of prefaced that, but it is an interesting thing when you know something. And for me, I got to speak for like 3 fucking hours every day. And it's hard whenever you see a breaking news that is potentially going to lead to something and you know it's wrong because you know what's actually right. It's a very interesting thing, kind of like, all right, what does everybody know versus what do I know? It's kind of a fine balance because I don't want to fuck over any of my friends. I don't want them to think that I'm using their friendship as a way to, you know, make myself better. It's like, no, you can trust me, I hope. You know, it's kind of a fine balance.
Right, and I just try to use logic. Like what I was saying today before you came in, Pat. You know, when you do a deal for an NFL coach and he's not in the city and you negotiate the deal with the agent, the coach doesn't, and he agrees to the deal – until the paperwork shows up, the coach doesn't get on an airplane.
Huh.
He's not getting on a plane and flying. He's not flying to the city to then turn around and fly home. It's not, you know, people said, well, you know, Josh McDaniels did that when he flew into Cleveland 2 years ago. No, he was going in there for the interview. He wasn't going in to get hired. He didn't have an agreement in place.
That's all right.
You know, so that the only when you get on a plane, they pick you up and bring you in, you got a deal.
Good for him.
So now, knowing what you know about Urban and the NFL as a GM, and then what do you think of the hiring of Urban Meyer in Jacksonville?
I think this is a little bit like when Jerry Jones hired Bill Parcells. You know, when Jerry Jones hired Bill Parcells, it was way out of the ordinary for him to do that. Jerry had typically not ever wanted a coach with that strong of a personality. But Jerry needed something bigger than a coach. He needed a guy to help him build a stadium. He needed somebody to give his brand some credibility, right? He needed Bill Parcells. He had other things in the well that he needed to, that Parcells could deliver for him, the stadium being one of them. And I think it's the same situation. Urban Meyer brings the Khan family credibility. He brings them a cachet. They just got voted down on helping with the infrastructure of around the stadium or trying to fix the stadium. Their facilities are outdated. Now he's got a little bit of an armor to go in there and fight off with. He gets credibility. He gets to say to his quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, here, I hired the guy who's won national championships. People are always saying, well, he doesn't know pro football. Look, he knows how to build culture. That's what he knows how to do. He knows it better than anybody. He's done it at Bowling Green. He's done it at Utah. He's done it at Florida. He's done it at Ohio State. He will build a culture. He will need people to help him with the day-to-day X's and O's of understanding the pro game. You can hire that. What the NFL hasn't been able to do, which is why there's seven openings, is hire leaders that can build culture. And I think that's what Urban will do. I'm not tied up on, well, he has no pro experience. He'll relate to the players. The players will relate to him. They'll get along. He'll hold them accountable. And they'll build a culture. And he gives Khan a chance to repair this image of what he is in Jacksonville and get the city of Jacksonville to give him some things that he needs because the team's got some vibrancy to it.
Close to Gainesville as well, right? Mm-hmm. Just like an hour and a half or whatever, where I would assume that Urban Meyer...
He's a legendary coach. I mean, look, that area is North Georgia, North Florida, however you want to call it. The guy brings the credibility to the table, you know, and now all of a sudden he's won national championships, been at two top schools. He's dealt with difficult players to deal with.
Will he have to adjust his style of coaching? I don't know his style of coaching. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody about it. Would he have to adjust his style of communicating? Because it came out today, he's not going to be the offensive guy or whatever. He's just going to be the leader of the team, which we all like. We are fans of that. Like, okay, let's get somebody that can do what you do, build a culture. But will he have to change the way he communicates with people from his college days to the NFL days? Because we all know it's two different styles of human.
Right. I think his style in college was more pro-related.
Okay.
He was dealing with a bunch of pro players anyway.
Got it.
But, you know, all of his Florida – I mean, he had a bunch of pro guys. And I think he understands how to deal with a difficult player and get the most out of him.
Pat, when you didn't have to deal with it, but being in the league and knowing, if you had a team and they hired a college coach, would – he be coming with a clean slate, or would you guys have some skepticism because he was a college coach coming to NFL?
I think you'd see like a mixed bag, right? Which is exactly what you're seeing right now. AJ thinks he's going to be great. There's some people that are like, no, this isn't going to work. But as soon as I think everybody respects, like if you're great, I think in the NFL fraternity, a lot of respect. But if he's bad, you're going to see people just like, be like, this doesn't work. This is why this doesn't work. But I think with a lot of what Lombardi's saying, and if you do sit back and like think about it, if he can build a winning culture down there, and if he has an owner that's willing to do whatever, which I would assume a lot of those conversations for the last month have revolved around like getting facilities and spending money and doing this and that. I mean, who says that he can't go on and be great? And I wonder if seeing Nick Saban be deemed the outright greatest college football coach of all time, Nick Saban did not have success in the NFL. If Urban Meyer could do that, I would assume for his resume too, it'd be like, hey, incredible college football coach, incredible NFL head coach. That goes a long way too.
And Mike, there was the report, was it a week or two ago, that Mr. Khan said that he would have his hands in the decision-making process as far as kind of personnel in that. Do you think that probably goes out the window now that Urban's there?
I think he probably still might, but I know he's going to listen to Urban. I mean, he's just, if you're going to pay the guy $10 million, $11 million, $12 million, you're going to listen to him. You know, you didn't hire him in there to ignore him. So you're going to listen to what he wants. And I think this, I think that the one thing I would say, when if Urban and Nick Saban had a conversation about the difference between pro and college, Nick would say you better have a quarterback if you're going to go in that league. And Nick was trying to get one. They failed Drew Brees on the physical, which is one of the biggest reasons Alabama has been – he went to Alabama. And because of that, you know, now Urban walks into Trevor Lawrence. I don't know if Urban takes this job if Trevor Lawrence isn't in the draft. If Justin Fields is in the draft, does he take it? I don't know. I think the Lawrence chip was a big one for him.
That makes
– good for the Jets, you know. Good for the Jets fucking losing them. You know what I mean? Like, when you think about the hiring, the interesting thing, and can we pivot to the Jets right now?
Sure, go ahead.
In the, I was talking to, we talked to Darius Slay earlier. He was a joy to talk to. Mm-hmm. Good energy, good everything like that. But then we started talking about the coaching hirings and what Lurie's up against if he's trying to hire a coach over there. They've interviewed everybody. They had odds on FanDuel for who's going to get the job and all that shit. The Jets, for as long as they're looking for a head coach, and if they interview everybody that interviews for the Eagles, doesn't Joe Douglas have a chance to potentially say, like, if he likes a coach, you do not want to get, like, listen, we offer you, it ended up being used as something about, because that's terrible timing, right, for Philly, because you got the ex-GM who knows everything about Philly, who's currently looking for a head coach as well. That kind of undercuts a lot of operations, right?
No doubt. And I think that, you know, that plus you've got Chip Kelly sitting in Los Angeles. You've got Doug Peterson vacationing in Florida, not going to coach this year. And you've got other assistant coaches that kind of can tell you what goes on inside that building. And that's going to be a powerful tool. Coaches are like doctors. They talk to one another. Even if they don't agree with one another, you know, they're from different disciplines of medicine. They still talk, and they never criticize one another like doctors. They do listen. Like, you can't go there. This is what's going to happen. Now, we know the jobs are hard to get to the United States senators, so there's only 32 of them. But you have options. If you have options, you're not going to do that unless somebody throws a boatload of cash at you.
That's an unwritten rule, huh?
Yep. Oh, yeah. They're always on the phone. Hey, here's what's going to happen. You know, let's just take Robert Saleh. He gets interviewed at the Jets. He's calling all his buddies. What do you know about Joe Douglas? What do you know about the Jets? What's it like working at the Jets? How are they? You know, and then, you know, then the next guy, well, what do I do? Then this guy, you know, everything is all predicated on what the now they never evaluate the evaluator, which is the most critical thing we have to do. Evaluate the evaluator. Right. So if this guy, right. But they don't do that, but they take in the information. And of course, the teams know where the negativity is coming from. I mean, people, you know, Troy Aikman came out today and said that Doug really left. He had a conversation with Doug, and Doug really left because he wants to play Hurts and all that. Well, that's got to get cleared up. I mean, somebody's going to, before they take the Eagles job, they got to talk to Doug and say, well, what's the real deal here?
Mike, did you in there say that Doug's taking a year off?
That's what he said.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I mean, that's what was in the Philadelphia papers today, that he's going to take. Oh, I mean, where's he going to go? He's not involved. He never was involved with the Jet job.
People were saying he was the favorite for the Jet job. That's just strictly because Joe Douglas' relationship?
People always go 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah. I did that today when Randy Fichtner got fired. Tomlin coached with Daryl Bevel. Daryl Bevel comes to the Steelers to be the OC, brings in Matty Stafford. Matty Stafford's the Steelers quarterback.
Super Bowl.
Yeah, there you go. That's usually what most fans will do. But like, there in Pittsburgh, I think Pittsburgh's biggest issue is losing Munchak.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Munchak.
If I'm Mike Tomlin, I'm on the phone trying to get the Eagles O-line coach, because I think he did a great job. Whatever line coach I think is out there from a staff that's been fired, that's my number one hire before I get a coordinator.
No, Munchak was huge. I mean, he was a head coach. I believe he's a Hall of Fame lineman. And then, yeah, he went to Denver to be with his family or whatever. But the Randy Fichtner firing had to happen. They talked about maybe, I think if Matt Canada does not get hired as the OC in Pittsburgh, that the writing's on the wall that Ben is not going to be back next year.
Yeah, I think they're in a lot of problems because they got to get below the cap. Ben's $41 million, you know, and there's their team's old. They're a little bit like New England. They got New England doesn't have cap issues. They have cap issues. They've got some serious decisions to make, and really, $41 million of it starts with Ben.
Yeah, I read an article today that they could get it down to 26 and then move some of the money into the next year's blah blah blah. But yeah, I mean, it's still at and some point they're gonna.
Ben has already come out and said, if the Steelers want me, I'll come back. So now,
but he's got guaranteed money.
Yeah, yeah, he does. $26 million, I believe, of it, or $22 million of it is guaranteed.
Different. Get your money, Ben.
I'll go play football too. Let's
get
go.
Get your money,
come
Ben.
Come on back, Ben.
All right, let's get into the games this weekend. First one, Rams at Packers, -6.5. Now that you've had some few days to digest it, look at some tape, look at your information, look at the money that's coming in, which is currently 60% of the tickets and 56% of the money is on the Packers. What do you think, Mike?
All right. I mean, I've been doing a lot of work on this. I've watched it. We know Goff is going to start today. Sean McVay announced Wolford can't play. So everybody, including me, talks about Goff being not a very good cold weather player. Mm-hmm. So he's played six games in under 40 degrees, two of them with Jeff Fisher, four of them with Sean McVay. The four with Sean McVay is 3-1. Now, he's been horrible, don't get me wrong. 50% completion, 6.37 yards per attempt, you know, five touchdowns, five interceptions. But they're 3-1 as a team. So I think that's the case. I think the bigger issue for me is we know the Rams can run the ball against the Packers to a degree. But if they get behind in this game and they have to start to throw it, it becomes problematic for them. The Packers have lost three games this year. And the only game that they didn't score over 20 points was the Tampa game when they turned it over. It was really their worst game of the year. I don't know how the Rams are going to score in the 20s to keep Rodgers from scoring. I think they will score. But let's go back a little bit. So Brandon Stokley's the defensive coordinator of the Rams. He was in Chicago with Vic Fangio. He's played against Rodgers a lot. He knows Aaron. He knows the eye contact. He knows the way, even though it's LaFleur's offense, which is different, he knows what Aaron likes and what he wants to run. But what Aaron's been remarkable of this year is Aaron has been remarkable on throwing the football down the field. He's 17 for 37 on throws over 31 yards. I mean, this guy has taken it to another level. And I don't know how the Rams answer that level.
Hey, by the way, that was an incredible run right there.
Very nice.
Stats in there? The stats? That was awesome. That was an awesome answer out of you, and you really painted an entire picture. For me, the big thing is what? Whenever you look at the Packers, you have to think, can they protect Aaron enough with that defensive line for him to get it off, especially because they got Bakhtiari out and another offensive lineman ended up in the COVID who was playing for the Colts last week. I see this game being a blowout, though, and I don't know why. I've said that a couple times. With what you said about the Rams' information, everything on Aaron, it makes me kind of second-guess it, but I just don't – the teams are so hot. The Packers are so hot, it feels like, and that defense has gotten even hotter as well as the season's gone along.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think, you know, the only thing that when you look at this, the Rams have a magic number to get to. They have to get to over 140 yards rushing. Uh-huh. That's what the Colts had. That's what Minnesota had. And that's what Tampa Bay had. They got to control the ball, get over 140 yards rushing to win the game. Can they do that? That's going to be a hard one. And with Goff really not threatening the field down the field, I don't see it.
Especially going back to that when the Niners beat the Rams, when they had Deebo Samuel, it was probably the only game he played. They had Mullins at quarterback, a lot of motion, a lot of movement. They beat the Rams that game. The Packers get the run game going. It feels like the Packers here for me.
You know, the other one, I don't want to jinx. This is playing off of Diggs' stat last week. So
44, great, 5-9.
Who's a professional gambler. He's on VSiN, does a really good job. He gave me this stat on the show this week, 89% in this round, 89% in this round over the last 15, 20 years, I don't know exactly, the winners covered.
Oh, really? So it's very similar to the 44-5-1.
Now, this round is always about home field, okay? This usually it's 3-1, 4-0, rarely 2-2. Home field wins here. Why? Because typically, because this round is teams are rested and you got to go on the road, and it's hard to run the ball on the road. So games become one-dimensional. So now without COVID, can the Rams run the ball in Lambeau without crowd noise? They could. They should be able to. Can they get to 140? I don't know. But that's going to change this a little bit. I don't know if that 3-1, 4-0 rule is going to stay in place, because I think that teams can run the ball with no crowd noise. What stops great run games? Obviously defense, but the defensive line getting off the ball is the same time as the offense, because the crowd noise prohibits that.
Packers 4-1 against the spread, their last five playoff home games as well, Mike.
Boom!
I saw a stat today that Aaron Rodgers is 0-4 when facing the number one ranked defense in the league.
I saw that tweet as well. That was kind of scary.
You know, you used to... Hey, Mike, what do you think? Do you think
they've never seen this Aaron Rodgers?
No, yeah. Correct. You think Jalen's going to mirror Devontae the entire game?
I think he will. I think there'll be times where he doesn't, and they'll still play man. I think here's the problem with mirroring, right? When you mirror a receiver, then it becomes a really good indicator for the quarterback. You can't indicate, you can't give Rodgers, you can't let him see your underwear before the ball snap. Like, you can't. He's too good. Like, and if he knows they're in man because of just by the alignment and the movement of Adams, then he's got you by the ass. You're dead. You might as well just take a, you know, you're done. So you got to fuck with him a little bit. You got to play man when he's not matched up on him. You got to play man when he's matched up on him. You got to play zone when he's matched up on him. You follow me?
Yep.
You can't let Rodgers get that break. And they do a lot of indicators. So what they do is you'll see Aaron, the back goes out. He brings him back in. That's an indicator, right? So he wants to indicate to him. You got to fuck with him. If you send a linebacker out on the indicator, he knows you're a man. If you kick the corner back out, he knows you're in zone. But when you bring it back in, you got to change your call. So you got to really be multiple. Now, remember this. Last year, why did Wade Phillips get fired? Wade Phillips got fired not because he's not a good coach. Wade's a really good coach. But Wade is very one-dimensional. He wants to rush five, play cover one. And when you're in these games, you need a big portfolio. You need to be able to play 33% man, 33% zone, 33% man zone. You got to mix it up, because why is this round different? Most of the time, this round has great quarterbacks in it. Uh-huh. And if you just play one coverage or one thing, those quarterbacks eat you alive.
All right, Ravens at Bills Saturday night. Currently, Bills minus 2.5, where I believe it opened at 3, down to 2.5. It was at 1.5 yesterday for a little bit. 53% of the tickets on the Bills, but 56% of the money is on the Ravens. Pat, you think this is going to be the closest game of the weekend?
Yeah, right? I think the reason why I think it's going to be the closest game is because I don't know how it's going to go. Yeah. I have no idea. And I think this is going to be a tough one to predict for a lot of people. I think if either team wins, we could say we saw it coming. And if either team loses, obviously, we could say we saw it coming. It's just, you got two hot teams right now. I mean, these are two hot teams playing. I'm so pumped about watching it. I'm very excited for this game. Lamar Jackson seems to be Lamar Jackson from regular season last year. Got the weight off his shoulder of winning his first playoff game, which he said he has acknowledged before. That team seems to be flying around on the defensive side of the ball as well. They stopped Derrick Henry last week, so what, the run game is big for Buffalo. I'm real excited for this game, and I think the reason why I think it's gonna be so tight is because I have no idea what's gonna happen.
Yeah, and I was looking at the stats, like Buffalo gave up 163 on the ground last week to the Colts, 309 in the air. This entire season, 2 years ago, Buffalo was one of the top three defenses in the league, and now this entire year it's not, their offense has been their strength, so it's weird. For some reason, if Lamar just scares me, Lamar, like, not being able to, like, him running the 2 minute drill last week at the end of the half and not being able to throw, like, that scares me in the playoffs, stuff like that. Mike, what do you think about this game?
All right. So for me, this game's a bad matchup for Buffalo in this sense. Buffalo's run defense is not very good. The teams that have beaten Buffalo have run the ball on them. Kansas City, 245, Arizona, 217. New England turns the ball over on the last drive of the game in the game in Buffalo, ran for 188. Tennessee, 139. They give up over 4.62 yards per carry in the run game. So it's really challenging for me to think that they're going to stop a very good run game of Baltimore. Baltimore, if they run this ball 35 times or more, it'll be challenging. Now, the Bills' run defense, when you run to the left of their run defense – they give up almost 6 yards a carry. When you run to the right, they give up 5 yards a carry. And Lamar in cold weather, this is remarkable. He's played 8 games in less than 40 degrees. He's 7-1 in those 8 games. He's got a 7.6 yards per rush. 94 carries for 719 yards, 7.6 per rush. He throws for 7.8, 18 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 65% completion. I think it's a game where Buffalo has to man up and try to play the best run defense you can. They can, but I think this is a hard matchup for them. I really do. Now, I think defensively, they got to stay in front of Josh Allen. Here's the remarkable thing about Josh Allen, all right? So last year in 19, he was 4 for 26 on throws over 31 yards. He was 9 for 33 on throws over 21 yards. He was 54 for 92 on throws over 11 yards. This year, he's 8 for 32 on throws over 30 yards. He's 17 for 29 on throws over 21 yards. Jesus. And he's 76 for 119 on throws over 11. He's improved in that 11 to 20-yard area by leaps and bounds.
It's Stephon Diggs, right?
And it's Diggs and it's Beasley. It's those two guys. But Baltimore can play Beasley. They can put Humphreys on Diggs, or they can put Humphreys on Beasley, and they can double Diggs. And there's no real run game that Buffalo's going to have. If Buffalo wins this game, Allen's got to do something heroic to me. And Baltimore, if they keep Allen in front of them, they got a chance to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, for someone who's a fan in that division, Marlon Humphrey does not get the credit he deserves across the league. He basically kind of – it seemed like he shadowed A.J. Brown last week, and A.J. Brown made some tough catches. Like, A.J. Brown is a dog. But then when you go with – you have Peters – and then I think Jimmy Smith is hurt, but I like the Baltimore secondary against the Bills passing offense, which is most of their offense now. Gumpy, what do you got?
Ravens 7-0 against the spread their last 7 playoff road games.
Boom.
7-1 against the spread their last 8 as a road dog in the playoffs.
Bang.
Seems like
they love being a dog, man. 20-8 against the spread their last 28 games overall.
I just found out who I'm betting.
That might be a hammered down sweep on that game. Sunday, Browns at.
Oh, I will alert everybody. It's Thursday at 3:58. I think this game will be pick'em come Sunday.
Okay. Interesting. Thank you for that, Michael.
Yeah, we'll have some patience.
Browns at Chiefs minus 10.
Oh, no, we should get it now.
We should get it now.
We should get it now.
Browns at Chiefs minus 10 for the Chiefs. Seems like a big line for me. Run us through your stats on that one, Michael.
All right, Browns and Chiefs. So to me, this is really a game about can the Browns play good enough defense? Because there's no lead that the Chiefs can't overcome in this game. If the Chiefs would have been behind 28-0 in the first quarter, they would have come back. The Browns have to be able to stop the football, to control the ball. They have to copy the Carolina Panthers game plan, and they got to have the ball last. The Browns defense is suspect. I know Denzel Ward didn't play, but without Olivier Vernon, it's going to be a challenge. They need Claypool to push Fisher back, and they need Myles Garrett to have his best game of the year. And they got to get some tip balls. So they've got to be able to do that. And Baker's got to be able to play and make chunk yards down the field and work the clock. So I think this is a time of possession game. I worry that there's just not enough in the Browns' arsenal to be able to come back. Because if they can't run the football, if they can't, they won't win. Everybody thinks Baker can carry and Baker can't. Just watch the jet tape. They can't win if they can't run.
I think a couple things here if we want to dissect a little bit deeper. I think 4-minute offense for the Browns has to be at an all-time high, okay? That goes to running the ball, but also in big situations. And speaking of big situations, their defense has to be able to get stops in massive situations because the Chiefs thrive whenever they got to have it, they get it. Like, that's just the way it is. For whatever reason, whenever there's a 3rd and 7 or a 4th and mm-hmm. 3 or something, or it's a last minute of the game, they are going to get it. As soon as Patrick Mahomes gets on the field, you go, they're going to walk right down. If the Browns defense can make massive plays in those big time moments, as opposed to what the Chiefs always end up doing, I think that is, but obviously you have to get to those points. But that is how the Chiefs have won games this year. I just think 10 points is a lot, Mike, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, my numbers on my spread has a 4-point game.
Yeah.
The Browns are going to need at least one.
I mean, But what I'm, what I just, to me, that you always worried about a backdoor cover with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I think the Browns are going to need at least one, like, 7 minutes slow, run the ball, drive, just grind it out, one of those. You know what I mean?
And you got to manage the game right. You got to win the middle eight, and you got to be able to have the ball last. If you get the ball with 5 minutes to go in the game and you're either up or you're down, you can't let them have it back.
You look at Chiefs against the spread, 1-4 against the spread, their last five as a home favorite.
Boom.
1-6 against the spread, their last seven as a favorite.
Bang.
1-7 against the spread, their last eight overall. And 0-4 against the spread, their last four home games this year.
I should have looked it up, but I just thought of it. I know that Andy Reid off of a bye record is very, very good.
Oh, yeah.
It's absurd.
Hey, Kafka might get a gig. You see that?
Yeah. I mean, they love Kafka there.
Why is it? Just because he's what Doug Peterson was?
I don't know. I think so. I mean, I don't, you know, it's always so hard to tell what comes out of that building because part of it's Bob Lamont, his program, his political momentum to get guys jobs and how that works. So I don't know. You know, Bob was Mike Holmgren's history teacher. You know this, right?
No, I have no idea who you're even talking about right now.
All right, so Bob, this is an American tale. Bob Lamont is Mike Holmgren's history teacher in high school. When Mike Holmgren needs an agent, Bob Lamont says, "Hey, I could be your agent," and so he gets him to be his agent. And Bob Lamont opens up a sports agency, and he uses his teaching background to basically help coaches put together notebooks on what they have to do to become head coaches. And he has formed this incredible, huge business, sports agency business based out of Lake Tahoe. And he's got Gruden, Andy Reid. He's got all of Mike Holmgren's clients from there.
That's awesome. Bob Lamont just raking in cash over there. Good for him. History teacher, huh? Now he's just over on Lake Tahoe living. Good for him.
Andy Reid's, by the way, Andy Reid's teams are 23-5 straight up and 20-8 ATS after buys.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I think Cleveland's going to cover, I just think Kansas City's going to be too explosive. I don't see the answers that Cleveland can have on defense.
Oh, and Kansas City could get up 20 in the first quarter, and you just be like, yep, that's what Kansas City, it's playoff time. They're playing for real now. You know,
happens. That's a great point, Ben. If they get up, if Kansas City comes out and scores, boom, boom, and now all of a sudden Cleveland can't run the ball, they're done.
Yeah, and Kansas City's defense really came around last year in the playoffs. It really started in the playoffs. They started playing well, so could happen again.
And 55% of the tickets and 60% of the money are on the Browns this weekend. So, and then the very last game of the weekend, fascinating. Bucks at Saints. 56% of the tickets are on the Bucks. 62% of the money is on the Bucks. -3 Saints in the Superdome. Mike, what do you got on this one?
Well, this is it. This is a game. When you go back and watch it, the Bucks couldn't get open. The corners of the Saints dominated the game. There was no throws to make, and I think really more than anything, Brady got hit too much. The Saints defensive front won the game, you know, and they weren't able to do anything. And when you break it down, these two games weren't close. And what I think the Saints do in this game that's different. So most teams, the Bucks are the number one team in football defensively. In teams throwing the ball more than running in the first half, because they know that if they try to run against their front, they won't run it. And that's what the Saints did. When you go back and watch that game on Monday night, they came out and shotgun and threw it, and they get the lead and they throw it and they put pressure. And then the Bucs couldn't convert a third down. They couldn't convert a third and two. Couldn't convert a third and three. They played straight man. This whole notion it's hard to beat a team three times. I think you can beat a team three times because you're better than that team. I think it's Saints.
I believe the record when you beat a team twice in the regular season and then face them in the playoffs, I believe it's 14-7, if I'm correct. Do you have that?
Yes, sir. Since 1970, teams that beat one team twice in regular season, the third time in the playoffs, 14-7 straight up.
Damn.
Pat, you.
I like Brady. The Bucks early, just because Tom Brady. You know, I think he's going to rally the boys over there. But the more and more I look into it and think about it, the more and more it's hard for me to go against. You know, just that defense. The same thing we talked about during the regular season. That I hope I don't forget. The Saints' defense was the only defense that we were talking about throughout the year that was, hey, this defense could win a Super Bowl. Like, this defense feels like it could win a Super Bowl if you can match the offense with it. And that is something that I think I've forgotten about here as I started thinking about it. It's going to be a fucking game, obviously. I can't wait to see how Tom Brady handles it. But it does, it is, the pendulum for me is starting to swing back to the Saints here. And I'm kind of bummed about it because I want Coach AQ Shipley to get a fucking Super Bowl.
I think their defense is very good, like, at every position. They have Cam Jordan, and then they have the dude who was out last week, but he's back. He had like 10
Hendrickson.
Sacks. Hendrickson.
He leads the team in sacks. He's got 13.
Davis, and then who they trade for San Francisco.
Quan Alexander.
He's very good.
Lattimore at the corner. Malcolm Jenkins is back at safety.
CJ GJ.
Quan's not back, though, is he?
Who?
Quan Alexander. He's out for the year. I thought he was.
My worry is the last time they played, the Bucs just let Breeze dunk it down.
That's what the Bucs did. I don't know how they go.
Like, are they going to do the exact same thing, Mike?
Look, that's what everybody does. They took all those short passes. Yeah. They're not going to try to come out and establish the run. They're going to throw it. That's what they did. But that's what everybody does against the Bucs. The Bucs have more passes thrown against them in the first half than any team in the NFL.
That's on me. I forgot Quan tore his Achilles. Thank you for that, Michael.
Yeah, well, yeah,
it's a team sport.
Is it? You know what? It is a team sport. Thank you.
Hey, you saw us get attacked yesterday because it is a team sport, Lombardi? We got attacked, dude.
Who got attacked? I didn't see this.
We got attacked because Diggs dives deep into the weeds.
Oh, you told me this. Yes,
The Juju Bees. The
we got attacked.
The fans of Juju attacked us.
And Bleacher Report put me out in the traffic as well. Basically, just threw me.
I get attacked every day, but I got two of people that I swear to God, when I open up my front door, I think I'm going to be the Chicken Man.
No, they're after me now too, Mike. Don't worry about it.
The Chicken Man from Philly. Yeah.
You know how he died, Pat?
What's that?
His name was Philip Testa. He's the Chicken Man. Springsteen wrote a song called Atlantic City. He's in it. But he opened up his door, and there was a bomb that went off, and there was nails and glass in the bomb. So it all exploded into him, and he died a painful death on his front lawn.
All right. Rest in peace to Chicken Man. Sorry he went through that. Have you seen the Unabomber Manhunt?
No, but I want to watch it. I want to watch that one.
I'm up late at night watching that. It is awesome.
Is it really?
It's really good.
The Olympic bombing one is also very good.
Richard Jewell got hosed there. I'm learning a lot about the FBI here, I think, in these two particular documentaries. The FBI might want to release a couple documentaries on the other side, by the way. The narrative about the FBI is not great off of these two docs.
Hey, you got your other son coming in this weekend, right, for the games?
We got them all here, yeah. Pat called me this morning. I had the two. We were out walking. I had two of them in there. I got two more coming. We're going to have the full team together. Well, it's my wife's birthday, so it's like Mardi Gras. This thing will go on for a month.
You got some of that popcorn going, Mike. That's good stuff.
Drinking some Dago Red?
I'll send more. I'll go up there. You should see the boardwalk today. It was packed. It's nice here. It's 50 degrees. The boardwalk's great. It's jumping.
That Lombardi football IQ, like, I would assume your wife, she gets involved in the conversations as well, or they leave the room.
She can't understand why people don't like 3 points. She doesn't understand why Frank Wright just wouldn't take 3 points and go home quietly.
A lot of us were confused. You guys should film that room. Now, granted, you can't because your kids are still going to win.
Put it on one of your YouTube channels.
I thought about that room. I thought about you guys sitting there just dissecting people's play calls and decisions and strategies and everything like that, plus the inside information from all the behind the scenes stories. And Scott, like, I assume the amount of football that is being tossed around in that room while you guys are watching games is awesome.
Well, we're going out Saturday night for my wife's birthday, so we're taping the game. We're gonna turn our phones off, and then we come back because you can only be at a restaurant till 10 o'clock here in New Jersey. They close it down, so at 10 o'clock we're going to come home and we'll catch up and watch it live.
Fast forward through all the bullshit, too.
We won't text you, Mike.
Yeah, I'm going to text him for sure. Oh, my God! That text is coming Saturday night.
All right, Mike, thank you.
We're doing it tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
We'll give the picks tomorrow. Next.
See you, Mike.
When there's only four games, Mike's got a lot of time to deep dive down in there.
Bro, he was pulling out fucking notes from different computers and pieces of loose leaf. Like, whenever we clap for him and said that was very well done, if you're not watching, you didn't see him go from three different computers to stats while speaking in a very flowing fashion. That was unbelievable. He did real.
I feel good about the information this weekend.
Yeah, me too. He's deep diving in there.
I was really thinking about the Bills until that conversation.
Bingo. Me too.
But I also think the Bills were very vulnerable. I think they should have lost last week.
Well, I think the strength of the Ravens' defense is their corners, and the strength of the Bills is the pass game. And then on the other side, Ravens' run game versus the Bills' defense.
So you're saying good on good, Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen can't beat those boys. That's what you're saying? But in the Packers game, you're saying you think –
I don't know where I'm going Packers yet.
Chiefs box is definitely a teaser. Right,
but hold on, though. Can we talk about Josh Allen? They've looked very fucking good.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
I know.
And that's where I was at.
My only hesitance with the Ravens is Lamar if they do get down.
Lamar played rope-a-dope with that snow talk, I'm telling you.
Yeah, he was trolling for sure.
Yeah, after hearing those stats, too, I thought that at first, but now definitely.
My issue is I grew up thinking and being taught that defense wins, but we are in a completely different era. So, like, Aaron is the number one offense going against the number one defense, my stupid brain always goes, number one defense.
Yeah, I got you.
But I'm having a hard time to adapt to that.
Well, I remember I said the other day, didn't I, to Aaron, defense wins championships or something like that. Yeah, and he shook his head. He said, I don't believe that. I was like, we could talk about that another day. That's an old cliche. You
know? We'll be back tomorrow, 3:30, same time, same place, with all of our picks for divisional weekend. I think it might be the best weekend in the NFL football.
Perfectly timed. Sleep in a little bit, hang out, hunt some winners, then watch back-to-back games that take you into the night.
Wait till 1 o'clock rolls around, there you can be like, where the fuck's the game at?
True.
Where the fuck's game?
Get in the Oculus Arena, dude. Yeah.
Watch some footy, Tom.
I do have some footy picks this weekend. So.
You do?
Yeah.
What are you getting into?
We'll give them tomorrow.
Have you been giving footy picks out?
First time this year. If Steelers go out, I got a lot more time on my hands. Okay.
By the way, I'm a hockey sharp. So
where?
I'm a hockey sharp. Still am. I don't make picks.
I thought you were done because the season was done.
Good call. You're right. I was.
Go out on top.
Rest in peace to the NHL, dude.
66% on the fucking hockey year.
I mean,
dude.
Plus 220. I mean, what are we doing?
Might as well have been 75%.
make it 4-1.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow. You got something? Were you going to say something there, Gummy?
Long Island plus 1.5 against Wagner in college basketball tonight.
Oh, I love the
lock. And San Diego plus 2 at Utah State.
What do we like about these teams? Anything or just that?
They're just better teams getting points on the road, where I don't think home and road matters as much in college basketball.
It's a good strategy. You should sell these picks.
Should. Make a pretty penny, dude.
3 footy picks tomorrow, too.
Yes!
I'll tweet them out in the morning.
All I know is...
those are locks!
I expect Liverpool and Man U to be a tight one.
What's going on with Liverpool?
Bit of a schneid, my friend.
I heard a couple diehard Liverpool fans are turning on Liverpool, dude. They're like, you never walk alone. Until now, bitch, we're out of here. What's going on? You guys stink?
Tied a couple games. We should have won, but they need a defender. They need to get a defender in the transfer window.
Zito.
Quick feed suit. Hammer!
Dan!